Okay, picture this. A patient rolls into the emergency room. They're burning up, fever, chills, muscles just aching everywhere. And, key clue, they just got back from a trip to a malaria zone.
Classic presentation.
Diagnosis comes back: Plasmodium falciparum malaria. Okay, before you even reach for a specific drug, what's the one lab test the absolute must order to keep this patient safe and why?
That's the million-dollar question right at the start.
Stick with us, you're going to learn to nail this stuff. Welcome to 88 Diagnoses, Anti-Malarial Drug Power-Up. I'm your guide today.
We're going to slice through the complexity of malaria treatment. Our goal to give you, the resident juggling a million things, that high yield, ready for the wards knowledge. Make those calls, save lives, ace those exams. This is for you.
And I'm here to help map this out. Malaria, well, it's tricky. Its life cycle is incredibly complex, and different drugs hit different stages. Understanding this, it's not just book smarts. It's absolutely vital for treating patients effectively, you know,
Right.
and for prevention too in the real world. Exactly. And this isn't just some niche tropical medicine topic you'll forget after rotation. Nope. This stuff is gold for ID consults, for critical care, even just taking a good travel history in general medicine or peds. So let's jump right in.
All right, future ID stars, let's nail the basics. Segment one, rapid rundown, life cycle and first line fighters. We're talking parasite playbook first, then our big gun, the artemisinins. This is where we build that foundation for a real ward win.
Okay, so to really get these drugs, you first need the parasite's game plan. Antimalarials target different spots in the life cycle. There's the asexual blood stages. These are the ones causing the fever, the chills, all the misery.
Right, the part that makes the patient feel sick.
Exactly. Then there are the liver stages. And crucially for some species, this dormant hypnozoite stage just hanging out in the liver. So our drugs kind of fall into categories based on their targets. You've got blood schizonticides, think atovaquone, proguanil, doxycycline, mefloquine, chloroquine, tafenoquine. They go after those blood stages. Primakine hits blood stages too, but mainly the non-falciparum ones like vVex, oval, malaria.
Then tissue schizonticides or hepatic schizonticides hit the liver stages. That's your atovaquone, proguanil again, primakine, and tafenoquine.
Right, and those hypnozoites, this is where it gets super interesting. Okay, mnemonic time. Picture these hypnozoites like sneaky sleepers hiding out in the liver. They're quiet, not causing symptoms now, but bam, they can wake up months, even years later, and cause a relapse.
That's a great way to think about it.
And our hypno hunters, that's Primaquine and Tafenoquine, they're the only drugs that can actually get rid of these sleepers.
And here's an absolutely hyper-practical tip for rounds. Always check the specific Plasmodium species. If it's Plasmodium vivax or Plasmodium oval, you need terminal prophylaxis with a hypnohunter. It's non-negotiable to stop that relapse. Miss this, you'll be sweating in the M&M conference, believe me.
Oof, yeah, good tip. So knowing these targets affects prophylaxis length too, right? How long you keep taking the meds after leaving the area.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense if you think about it. Drugs that only hit blood parasites like doxy, mefloquine, chloroquine, you got to keep taking them for 4 weeks after exposure.
Yeah.
Why? To catch any parasites that sneak out of the liver late.
Ah, okay. Makes sense.
But the ones that hit both liver and blood stages, itovaquone proguanil, primakine, tafenoquine, you can stop those much sooner, usually just 1 week after leaving, because they nail the liver stage too.
Okay, freeze frame, pause and think time. A traveler gets diagnosed with Plasmodium vivax. You treat the acute infection? Great. But what's the one absolutely critical next step to prevent it from coming back? And what specific drug class do you need? Think about it.
All right, let's shift gears to the real heavy hitters. The artemisinin derivatives. Amazing story, actually. They come from the Chinese sweet wormwood plant, Artemisia annua, been used for like 2,000 years.
Wow.
Pure mechanism. It's pretty
Yeah.
cool. They basically bind iron inside the parasite. This kicks off a reaction, makes free radicals, these super destructive molecules. They wreck the parasite from the inside. It's fast.
And clinically, that speed is huge, right? They hammer the blood stages of all Plasmodium species. Fastest parasite clearance you can get. Plus, they even hit gametocytes.
Which are the forms that infect mosquitoes.
Exactly. So using them has actually helped reduce malaria transmission overall.
Okay. Objective, must know info time. This is absolutely non-negotiable for exams and, more importantly, for your patients on the wards. Intravenous artesunate, IV artesunate, is the first-line therapy for severe malaria, period. It's flat-out superior to the older option, quinine, for clearing parasites and reducing mortality. Kids, adults, doesn't matter. It saves more lives.
That's huge.
They even use rectal artesunate in super remote places to stabilize patients before they can get to a clinic.
You know, I actually got burned on this once. Had a patient with severe malaria, started them on IV quinine, just wasn't working fast enough, felt like we were losing ground.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We switched to IV artesunate, and honestly, it felt like hitting a reset button. The patient turned around so quickly.
Mm.
So yeah, don't be that resident. Remember, save your artesunate for severe malaria. It's the shortcut.
But here's the catch. They have a short half-life. So after that initial IV artesunate, you must follow up with a longer-acting oral drug once the patient can take pills. Use artesunate alone for less than 5 days. The malaria will likely come back. And that's due to the short action, not resistance.
Good point. Any major side effects?
Generally, really well-tolerated. You can see some post-treatment hemolysis, especially if the parasite load was super high. Rare allergic reactions. Maybe some temporary dizziness or balance issues, but they go away.
And for our OBGYN colleagues or anyone managing pregnant patients, artemisinins are considered safe in the first trimester. Artemether-lumefantrine is the go-to recommended by both the WHO, that's the World Health Organization, and the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Right. And critically, you generally don't use artemisinins alone as monotherapy for treatment. To prevent resistance and keep treatment short, we use artemisinin-based combination therapies, or ACTs.
Makes sense. Combine the fast killer with a buddy that sticks around longer.
Exactly. They usually come in fixed-dose pills, taken for just 3 days. Think artemether-lumefantrine, artesunate-imodiaquine, dihydroartemisinin, and piperaquine. Those are the main ones. And this is another must-know, a global health policy point. The WHO has called for a ban on manufacturing and selling oral artemisinin monotherapy. It's all about stopping resistance in its tracks. Super important.
Okay, let's weave it back. Remember those sleepers, the hypnozoites and Vyvax and Ovail? ACTs, fantastic. They crush the blood stages like nobody's business, but you still need the Hypno Hunter's Primaquine or Tafenoquine to finish the job, clear out those liver sleepers, and stop the relapse. Don't forget that last step. Okay, if you can't remember everything from that whirlwind, remember this. For P-Vivax and P-Ovil, hunt down those hypnozoites with a Hypno Hunter to stop relapse. And for severe malaria, IV artesunate is your definitive first move. All right, let's move on. Segment two, ward wins. Quinoline know-how and antifolate arsenal. Now we're talking the workhorses, the quinoline derivatives, and our strategic backup, the antifolates.
Mastering these guys and their quirks, that's a definite ward win. Saves you headaches later.
So the quinoline derivatives, this group includes things like chloroquine, imodiaquine, quinine, quinidine, mefloquine. They mostly work by building up inside the parasite's little stomach. It's food vacuole.
And here's the cool part. They grab onto heme, which is toxic to the parasite if it builds up. They stop the parasite from crystallizing it safely. So toxic heme accumulates, kills the parasite.
Ah, so a second mnemonic. Think of quinolines as the heme blockers. They basically stop the parasite from taking out its own trash, right? It gets poisoned by its own waste. Messy, like you said, but effective.
Exactly. Let's break them down. First, the four eminent quinolines. Chloroquine. Historically, this was massive. The first big gun anti-malarial. Still works against P. ovil, P. malaria, and, where there isn't resistance, P. viathis and P. falciparum. But here's objective. Must-know info number three. Widespread resistance means chloroquine is mostly out for P. falciparum treatment in most parts of the world. Huge point. But it's still often good for Ovail, malaria, and Vyvax in many areas. Knowing that difference. Crucial for exams.
Got it. Side effects.
Usual stuff. Headache, dizziness, upset stomach. Itching, or pruritus, is weirdly common in people of African descent, but it goes away. Serious problems are rare with short courses. Oh, and never give chloroquine IV too toxic, oral only. Then there's imodiaquine, similar to chloroquine, used a lot in ACTs outside the U.S., but critical safety alert, objective, must know for. Imodiaquine was pulled from the U.S. market. Why? Risk of granulocytosis wiping out white blood cells and liver toxicity, especially when used long-term for prophylaxis.
Yeah.
That pitfall.
Yikes.
A piperaquine. The bisquinolone, also used in ACTs, works against chloroquine-resistant strains, has a long half-life, which gives some post-treatment protection, can prolong the QT interval on an ECG, so something to watch.
Okay, now the four methanol quinolones, quinine and quinidine, these are the old-school ones from the cinchona tree bark. Quinine is still used parenterally in some places. Quinidine is an isomer, also effective for severe malaria, but IV quinidine isn't available in the U.S. anymore since late 2017.
Right. And they both cause syntonism. That's the classic cluster of side effects. Ringing in the ears, tinnitus, feeling sick, headache, dizziness, maybe blurry vision. Pretty much everyone gets some degree of it. It goes away when you stop the drug.
Okay, here's a big don't be that resident moment.
Mm.
Synchronism is expected with quinaquinidine. It does not mean you need to lower the dose, but man, it really affects whether patients take their meds. So counsel them, watch them closely, knowing that is a definite ward win for managing patient expectations.
Absolutely. And dosing. Quinine has a short half-life, so you take it 3 times a day orally, often given with doxycycline or clindamycin for 3 to 7 days. But remember, for severe disease, IV artesunate is way preferred over quinine or quinidine now. Another on-the-wards tip. Quinine and quinidine have a narrow therapeutic window. If you are using them, you need cardiac monitoring, serial blood pressures, ECGs to watch that QT interval, look out for ventricular tachycardia. Quinidine especially is more cardiotoxic. Oh, and check blood sugar. They can make the pancreas release more insulin.
Totally. I remember this patient on quinine complaining constantly. My ears are buzzing, my vision's weird. My mind immediately jumped to some crazy neuro thing, panic setting in.
Oh.
Then, like a light bulb moment, I remembered synchronism from some flashcard. It was textbook. A bit funny now, but it hammered home. Knowing the expected side effects saves you panic and makes you look sharp.
Definitely. Okay, next up, mefloquine. Oral drug, used for treatment, or weekly prophylaxis. Now, huge objective, must know info number 5. Pay attention.
Yeah.
Mefloquine is absolutely contraindicated if someone has a history of neurologic or psychiatric problems, or even a strong family history of seizures or major psychiatric disorders.
Yes.
Because it can cause seizures, encephalopathy, even psychosis, especially at treatment doses. Even with weekly prophylaxis, the risk of bad dreams, insomnia, panic attacks, psychosis is higher than other options. It's a major patient safety issue and a favorite exam question. So another on-the-wards tip. If prescribing mefloquine for travel prophylaxis, start it 2 or 3 weeks before the trip. That way you can see if the person tolerates it before they're stuck overseas with side effects.
Right.
Okay, lastly in this group, the 8-aminoquinolones. Primaquine and tafenoquine. Primaquine was the first. Its main job, prevent relapse of P. vivax and P. oval by killing those dormant hypnozoites. Tafenoquine is newer, long-acting, does the same thing but often in a single dose. Critical safety alert. Objective, must know number 6. This is maybe the most important safety point today. You must test for G6PD deficiency, that's glucose-6-phosphate dehydrogenase deficiency, before giving primaquine or tafenoquine. Massive hemolysis. The drug can cause red blood cells just break apart in people with G6PD deficiency. It can be life-threatening. There are special dosing considerations for mild deficiency with primaquine, but tafenoquine needs near normal levels.
Yeah.
And both are big NOs in pregnancy because you don't know the baby's G6PD status. Primaquine also contraindicated in young infants and breastfeeding moms of young infants.
Okay, let's weave back that mnemonic again, those liver sleepers. The hypno-hunters primaquine, tafenoquine are the only cure, but only if the patient passes that G6PD test first. No test, no hypno-hunter. End of story.
Exactly. Primaquine can also cause some GI upset. Taking it with food helps. There's also a strategy the WHO suggests. Sometimes a single low dose of primaquine is given after an ACT for falciparum malaria, just to reduce transmission by killing game metasites. That low dose is thought to be safe even without G6PD testing, except in pregnancy.
All right, pause and think time again. You have a 35-year-old guy diagnosed with Plasmodium vivax. You treated the acute infection successfully. Now you want to give him primaquine or tafenoquine to prevent relapse. What lab test is absolutely mandatory first? And what's the potentially fatal complication if you skip it?
Okay, let's quickly cover the antiphalates. This group includes drugs like sulfonamides, pyrimethamine, proguanil. They mess with the parasite's ability to make folate, which it needs for DNA synthesis. Sulfadoxin pyrimethamine, or SP, it's a combo pill, targets 2 different enzymes in that folate pathway. Side effects, usually mild GI stuff, headache, can really cause severe skin reactions like Stevens-Johnson syndrome, SJS, or toxic epidermal necrolysis, TNN, because of the sulfa part.
But like chloroquine, SP has a lot of resistance now for P. falciparum, right? So it's mostly used for prevention.
Exactly. Its main uses now are intermittent preventative treatment in pregnancy in endemic areas and seasonal malaria chemoprophylaxis for kids in parts of West Africa. Then there's Atovaquone Proguanil. Malarone is a common brand name. This combinates 2 different pathways needed for making pyrimidines, which are DNA building blocks. Atovaquone hits the parasite's mitochondria. Proguanil hits folate metabolism again. Even with some resistance popping up, this combo still works really well for treatment and prevention pretty much everywhere.
Okay. Seems like a reliable option. All right, wrapping up segment two, if you only remember one thing, remember this. Always test for G6PD deficiency before using primakine or tafenoquine, and screen carefully for neuropsychiatric history before even thinking about mefloquine. Let's do it. Segment three, case clash. Putting it all together in the Dirty Dozen. Time to connect dots with the real-world case. Plus, we'll hit the antimicrobials used in malaria and issue a serious warning about dodgy drugs out there.
Okay, first, the antimicrobials. Tetracycline, doxycycline, clindamycin. These guys work differently. They target protein synthesis in the parasite, specifically in an organelle called the epicoplast, which is kind of a leftover from ancient bacteria.
Interesting. So they're antibiotics, but they hit the malaria parasite too?
Yep, but they're slow. Their effect shows up in the next generation of parasites. So you almost always use them with a faster acting drug like quinine traditionally. Doxycycline is used more often than tetracycline because it lasts longer.
Right, and clindamycin used to be paired with quinine for first trimester pregnancy treatment, but ACTs like artemether lumefantrine are generally preferred now, yeah. Easier, better tolerated.
Correct. Good news is we haven't really seen resistance to these antimicrobials in malaria. Bad news. Side effects are common, especially with tetracyclines. Stomach upset, yeast infections. Doxy can cause nasty esophageal ulcers if not taken right. And photosensitivity sunburn risk. Okay, objective, must know 7, especially for PEDS and OBGYN folks. Tetracyclines, the drug class, generally shouldn't be given to pregnant or breastfeeding women or kids under 8. Why? They can deposit in growing bones and teeth and cause permanent staining.
Ah, yeah, I heard about that.
However, doxycycline specifically binds calcium less strongly, so it might be okay for short courses like 21 days or less, even in younger kids if needed. Clindamycin is the go-to alternative for treatment in these groups, but clind is not for malaria prophylaxis. Let's bring back that mnemonic. Remember the Queen Alliance's heme blockers. Stopping that heme crystallization, these antimicrobials, totally different. They gum up the parasite's protein factories. But they're slowpokes, so they almost always need a partner, a heme blocker like quinine, or a quick killer artemisinin to really get the job done fast.
Got it. Okay, pause and think number three. Pregnant patient, first trimester. Uncomplicated Plasmodium falciparum. Which antimicrobial should you definitely avoid as a main treatment component? And what's the WHO recommended ACT for her?
Now let's talk about something really sobering. Drug quality. Counterfeit and just plain low-quality antimalarials are a massive problem globally. It's not theoretical. It means patients fail treatment, get sicker, and it fuels drug resistance for everyone.
Seriously, how bad is it?
It's bad. Surveys in Southeast Asia found like 30 to 50% of antimalarials tested were fake. Subtherapeutic doses, sometimes no active drug at all, found everywhere, corner shops, pharmacies, even hospitals sometimes. And we're seeing more and more evidence of this crap popping up in Africa too, especially outside the official health system.
Wow, that's terrifying.
So, objective, must know number 8, a real-world pitfall. Counterfeit and poor-quality antimalarials are rampant. Be aware. Make sure your patients get their meds, especially for travel prophylaxis or self-treatment, from totally reputable sources. Patient safety depends on it. Non-negotiable.
Yeah, I heard a story from a colleague once. Patient kept relapsing with malaria despite getting the right treatment. Turns out they'd bought the pills from some sketchy street vendor overseas.
And they were probably sugar pills or had barely any drug.
Exactly. Just drove home how critical the source of the medication is. Don't let your patients get burned by fake drugs. All right, team, think tank caps on. Let's hit this interactive case study. The post-travel fever dilemma. Ready? A 28-year-old woman hits the ER. 3 days of high fevers, chills, muscle aches, headache. She got back from a 2-week trip to Uganda 10 days ago.
Okay. High index of suspicion.
Peripheral smear confirms Plasmodium falciparum. Parasitemia is 3%. She's a limit-oriented, no acidosis, no severe anemia, other labs mostly okay. She mentioned she took doxycycline for prophylaxis, but stopped it the day she flew home.
Ah, stopped it too soon. Classic mistake. Okay, step one. How do you classify her malaria, severe or uncomplicated? And based on that, what labs do you need stat besides the smear?
Give it a thought.
Okay. Based on the info, no altered mental status, no acidosis, no other severe features, parasitemia under, say, 5-10%, depending on local guidelines. This is uncomplicated malaria. Immediately, you need that G6PD level before considering certain drugs later. Repeat smears to track the parasitemia, a complete blood count, CBC, electrolytes, liver function tests, LFTs, and kidney function tests.
Good. Step two, treatment choice. It's uncomplicated P. falciparum. What's the first line treatment, and why not chloroquine or just artesunate by itself?
Right. First line is an artemisinin-based combination therapy, ACT, like artemether lumefantrine. Why not chloroquine? Widespread resistance. Why not artesanate monotherapy? Too short-acting, high risk of recurrence, and selecting for resistance. Need that combo.
Excellent. Now, branching scenario one, the curveball. Freeze. What if her G6PD test comes back low, say 40% of normal activity? How does that change things right now?
Good question. For treating uncomplicated falciparum with an ACT right now, it actually doesn't change the immediate plan. ACTs don't typically cause hemolysis with G6PD deficiency, but that result is super critical information for later. If this had been PVIVAX, it would absolutely rule out standard primakine or tofenaquine for relapse prevention. It also might affect the decision if considering low-dose primakine for gametocyte clearance later.
Perfect nuance. Branching scenario two. Okay, reset. What if her smear showed plasmodium vivax instead of falciparum, same presentation otherwise?
Okay, vivax. Still treat the acute blood stage with an ACT. But because it's vivax, you must plan for anti-relapse therapy. So after confirming her G6PD status is adequate, you'd add either primakine or tofenaquine to kill those hypno hunters for the sleepers.
Got it. Final one, branching scenario three, back to falciparum. What if her paracetemia wasn't 3%, but 12%, and she's confused, disoriented when she presents?
Okay, now that changes everything. High paracetemia plus altered mental status equals severe malaria, no question. Immediate action, 5-ER artesanate. Start that immediately. Once she stabilizes, can tolerate oral meds, then you transition her to a full course of an oral ACT.
Brilliant. Okay, listeners, pause and think. Talk it out loud, scribble it down. How did you handle those what ifs? That's the kind of rapid fire thinking you need on the wards. If you can't remember everything from that case challenge, remember this. ACTs are king for uncomplicated malaria. Always assess for severity, always know the species. And for Vivax or Ovil, you got to deal with those hypnozoites safely after G6PD testing. All right, time for the memory blast. Rapid fire review, drill sergeant style, what you need to know, NOW. Ready?
Let's do it. Malaria drugs hit blood stages, liver stages, or those sneaky hypnozoites. Vivax Ovil relapse. Need a hypnohunter primakine ofenaquine for the liver sleepers. Non-negotiable. Test G6PD before primakine ofenaquine. Risk of hemolysis. Severe malaria. First line is IV artesanate. Remember that shortcut? Uncomplicated malaria. Treat with ACTs. WHO, banned oral artemisinin and monotherapy fight resistance. Quinolines, heme blockers, like quinine, cause synchronism, tinnitus, nausea, etc. Expected side effect, impacts compliance, watch for cardiotoxicity, narrow therapeutic window, mefloquine, big NO if neuropsych history, screen carefully, serious side effects, tetracyclines doxy, slow acting, used with partners, avoid in pregnancy kids, 8, teeth bone risk. Clinda is the alternative for treatment in those groups, not prophylaxis. Watch out for fecal quality drugs, they cause treatment failure and resistance. Trust the source. And here's a final thought to chew on. Think about how global drug resistance patterns shape our guidelines. Even if you're working in a place where malaria isn't common, what responsibility do we have as clinicians? Maybe in guiding travelers on the right prophylaxis, making sure we use drugs correctly to prevent resistance from spreading further. Something to consider.
Great point. All right, residents, you totally got this. Take one new tip, hit the wards with it today, quiz yourself on Hypno Hunters tonight, and hey, DM us your clutch moments, your epic fails, your questions at 88diagnoses. Follow us on Instagram at 88diagnoses. That's DIAGNOSES, plural. Join the conversation, share what you're seeing out there, your patients, and yeah, probably your attendings too. Well, thank you.